DW Deutsche Welle. Living Planet.
From DW Studios in Bonn, this is Living Planet, and I'm Charlotte Lomas. 2016 was another record-breaking year for the climate. Not only was it the warmest year since records began, but the frequency of extreme weather events around the world also increased. That's according to the latest State of the Climate report, published this month by the American Meteorological Society. To find out more, I spoke to the report's co-editor, Deka Arndt, chief of the Climate Monitoring Branch at NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in the United States.
Well, it was a warm year. This is an annual report, so it's like getting the results of your annual physical exam. So it's a very warm year, but more importantly, in other parts of the climate system, we see change either at record levels at 2016 or kind of reaffirming long-term trends that we've seen in recent years. So we saw sea ice down near historic lows. We saw the ocean warmer, and especially the upper layer of the ocean. Upper ocean heat content was record high. We saw, even in the hydrologic cycle or the water cycle, so extreme rains and extreme drought, we saw a lot of drought this year, not only over the land, but in the saltier parts of the ocean, which are salty because there's little precipitation. They were even saltier this year. So these all kind of reinforce the point that we're seeing changes throughout the world, and that global temperature is an interesting number, but it's this stuff that's going on underneath that that's important to people's lives.
And were there any surprise findings?
No, not big surprises. We've known that the world is changing overall. I'm astonished every year at the amount of ice that we lose from the glaciers around the world. So something like 18 meters thick a slab has essentially been erased from the top of the average glacier over the last 35 years. That blows me away every single year. But in general, no, the signs that we see are consistent with a warming planet, and that is an unfortunate reality, but it wasn't a surprise.
And which areas were most affected in 2016?
Well, in terms of drought, it was a drought around the world, but particularly the southern hemisphere dealt with quite a bit of drought during 2016. So we saw significant issues in parts of South America, Australasia, and Africa dealing with drought. It was a big drought year, and that was probably regionally the big takeaway that I saw. The Arctic, of course, although the population is very small there, the Arctic continues to race out ahead of the rest of the planet in terms of change. So the changes that we're seeing both in sea ice, in ocean temperatures, in the greenness, the shrubification of the tundra, again, much faster than the rest of the planet.
And specifically in the United States, what sort of patterns emerged from last year?
So the U.S. was warm. It was its second warmest year on record. We came in at 12.7 degrees Celsius. That's 1.2 degrees above the 30-year normal. It is quite warm. We are seeing an increase overall with U.S. temperatures. And it was also a fairly wet year. We saw a lot of drought recovery in the West. We'd really been dealing with drought in the western part of the United States for several years before, and we saw some relief in 2016 there. We are a small piece of the planet, but we were quite warm compared to our own history, and that little chunk of the Earth that we take up, we contributed to what was ultimately the warmest year on the global record.
And each year, new scientific reports are published, which basically say the same thing, that climate change is happening and that it's extremely likely that humans are to blame. Added to this, there are stern warnings from scientists that the world has very little time left to decarbonize if global warming is to stay below the 2-degree threshold. Why do you think we keep having to come back to the same conversation? And what's holding us back from just accepting the science and getting on with the job?
Well, change is big and it's scary. And a lot of times people don't jump into large changes without a great deal of impetus. But if I could go back, you know, the purpose of this report really has never been to urge action. If there weren't kind of this political environment surrounding climate change in various countries of the world, we'd still be doing this anyway. This is kind of our job, to get together. Each of us monitors a different piece of the Earth system, and to kind of put it together in this almanac, really for science and for the history of science. So these larger political issues that surround it are a big kind of conflating factor. But the purpose of the report is not to urge action. It is to help provide a central set of facts so that the folks that are having these discussions can use those.
Does this get frustrating for you to have to report these same things over and over again? And is there a level of concern for you working in this field?
Well, there's certainly concern. Some days are frustrating overall. Yes, there is concern. The world continues to change. It continues to change fast enough that some of us aren't going to be able to keep up. That's sad on a human level. I do worry quite a bit. It's evidence every year that we are seeing kind of profound global scale changes. It is hard for a lot of people to get their heads around. It is, in some ways, it feels like a bad medical diagnosis year after year after year, and you wish that it would sink in. But overall, it's quite rewarding.
Based on past trends and observations, what can we expect for the year 2017? Do you think it will be another record-breaking year?
I don't know if it will be a record-breaking year. Long-term climate change is like riding up the escalator over time, and then we have events like El Nino and La Nina, which are like jumping up and down while you're on the escalator. So 2016 was the warmest on record because there was a fairly strong El Nino, which was a large jump, but also because there was, you know, 50, 60 years of warming, which is a long ride up the escalator to reach the new height. That El Nino has waned since the middle of 2016. So I don't think 2017 will make warmest year on record. It will undoubtedly be one of the five warmest years on record, and it will be much warmer than anything we saw since the very late 20th century. I mean, that's a no-brainer. Every year is kind of predestined to be a contender for warmest year on record now, and that's the consequence of long-term climate change.
Looking forward for 2017 and beyond, what are the biggest areas of concern?
Water is the biggest. I mean, if that would be my assessment, my individual opinion, you know, where do we go get water? How do we get water? How clean and fresh and available is that water? What is the timing of that water? Do we depend on glacial melt and the timing of melt for that water? I think around the world, universally, the thread that you can weave through the issues that we face all come back to water. Do we have too much? Do we have enough? Is it salty or fresh? And, you know, that's going to be what we manage over time. When the political situation clears up, and it will, our sons and daughters will be working with each other to do the best job they can to manage water.
That was Dika Arndt, Chief of the Climate Monitoring Branch at NOAA's National Centre for Environmental Information, talking about the State of the Climate Report for 2016.
Cool, clear water. Keep a moving, Dan. Don't you listen to him, Dan. He's a devil, not a man. And he spreads the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you? It's water. Cool. Clear water.
Many places around the world are feeling the impacts of drought and rising temperatures. One of those is the Guadalquivir River Delta in Andalusia, southern Spain. There, drought is threatening farmers' livelihoods, as well as the delicate wetlands. Our reporter, Lauren Freya, has this story from Europe's southwest tip.
From these marshy banks of southern Spain's mighty Guadalquivir River, Christopher Columbus set off for the New World. But since then, this river has gotten more salty, As fresh water is extracted for agriculture, drought, made more frequent by climate change, means less rainfall replaces it. Tides send salt water farther upriver. This pumping station sucks 3,000 liters out of the river per second, diverting it to irrigation canals. Jose Godoy tests the salt content every hour.
Gramos de cloruro sódico.
Okay. Sodium chloride.
Que es el que nos hace verdaderamente daño al cultivo del arroz.
When the water gets too salty, it poisons crops, he explains. So Godoy cuts the water supply to the canals. Crops can die of drought.
Este es largo. Este es del tipo largo americano.
Three times in the past two decades, rice farmer Manolo Cano Lopez hasn't been able to grow anything at all. Not enough fresh water. And weather patterns have changed, he says.
Que las lluvias son menos frecuentes y más violentas.
The rain comes less often, but when it does, there are violent storms. It's damaging my crops. They're like my babies, these delicate rice plants.
Por eso dice mi mujer que si vengo a ver a mi niño.
This is Spain's biggest rice-growing area. You heard that right. They grow rice, submerged in water in this hot, dry climate. But that's not the worst of it, because rice farmers draw water from the river. The bigger problem here is berries. This region supplies about a third of all of Europe's strawberries, and strawberry farmers drill wells into the aquifer.
And the problem with the aquifer is something that you don't see, because it's like an underground pool, and you don't know exactly what happened.
But Felipe Fuentes-Sath does have some idea. He measures groundwater levels for the World Wildlife Fund. And he says 80% of this region's aquifer has dried up. Some farmers without permits haul drilling rigs out into the forest in the middle of the night. Fuentes-Sath says there are about 10,000 illegal wells around here, and local officials aren't doing enough to stop them. He pulls up Google Earth on his laptop.
Mira, muy fácil, mira.
So we're looking at Google Maps, a satellite image of these dirt roads that cut through a forest, and then we've zoomed in on what looks like a little lake, and you say there are 14 illegal wells?
Yeah, this is an illegal reservoir in the middle of the forest. 14, 15 pipes from illegal boreholes in the area that go to a farm.
He gave me GPS coordinates to find one such reservoir, where farmers store the water they've sucked out of the aquifer illegally.
This beautiful crystal clear water, and it's like a swimming pool, perfectly dug out, like deep also. It's about half a football field in size, with maybe a dozen pipes pouring water from auxiliary wells all around the countryside here.
This isn't only about farmers stealing water. It's about farmers stealing water that won't be replenished as quickly by rainfall because of increasing drought. Scientist Fuentes-Sath says climate change is already driving up temperatures here.
But there are data at the moment that they are increasing 0.07 degrees every year. So it's something that is really high. The normal seasons have been moved. So this is really a complete a shame for the biodiversity, for the movement of the species, for the flora, for fauna, for a lot of things.
I've just pulled over on the side of the road on this small farm track, and it's so blisteringly hot that I have to schedule interviews very early in the morning, so I'm up early watching the sunrise here. On one side of me, there are little signs that say Dow Seeds. This is big industrial commercial farming. You can hear a tractor going by. And on the other side, in the distance, I can see a row of pink flamingos.
Because this is the edge of one of Europe's most important wetlands, Doñana National Park.
Soy Juan Pedro Castellano,
Park director Juan Pedro Castellano takes me on a 4x4 tour. UNESCO says all these illegal wells threaten Doñana's existence. The agency is weighing whether to put Doñana on its danger list of World Heritage Sites. It would be the first national park in the European Union to make the list. As farmers drain Doñana's aquifer, lagoons shrink in the national park, which is home to wild horses and about 6 million migratory birds.
Hay patos, hay flamencos, hay espátulas, somormujo.
Look at all the ducks, flamingo, so many species of birds in this one lagoon alone. It's just like climate change. We don't know exactly what will happen and how fast, but where we'll see change is in these lagoons and wetlands, right here.
En la zona húmeda, en el matorral de zona húmeda, en sitios como este.
Man-made water shortages, the park director says, are essentially giving us a preview of how this whole region will experience climate change. Scientists predict rising temperatures will dry out this area.
Si el acuífero baja, ese sitio empezaría a ser dominado por plantas como esta.
If the aquifer is drained, this area gets dominated more and more by desert plants, like that one there. It reduces the biodiversity in this sandy part of the park.
The seasons have already changed for rice farmer Manolo Cano. Spring comes earlier. None of his children has taken up the family business. He wonders what it must have been like 500 years ago when Christopher Columbus sailed through here.
Y regábamos sin ningún tipo de problema y no había sal.
They must have been able to water their crops as much as they wanted and never worry, he says.
Es el pago que tiene la...
It's the price we pay for modernity, he says. We have to grow food, but to do it, we've changed this landscape forever. Lauren Freyer, DW, on the Guadalquivir Delta in southern Spain.
From too little water to too much, the Dutch certainly know how to live with water. After all, a third of the country lies below sea level. The Netherlands has a long history of flood defence, which makes it better prepared for some impacts of climate change. As rising seas threaten the economies of low-lying countries, the Dutch are benefiting economically from this environmental problem by selling their expertise abroad. From there, Stephen Beard has more.
With its four giant sails flailing in the wind, a traditional Dutch windmill is at work. Inside the mill, the great clunking wooden wheels and gears are doing the job they've done for centuries, pumping and draining. Now a tourist attraction near Amsterdam, this mill is one of many reminders of this country's unceasing struggle against water.
Already for 1,000 years, the Dutch are fighting, battling the sea, building dikes, draining the land with the windmills. We're standing here a couple of meters below sea level, and we have our feet dry. So let's say welcome to the Netherlands.
Piet Dirk of the Dutch consulting firm Arcadis. He's worked on many projects around the Netherlands, pumping, draining, building sea barriers and storing water in a country that's largely below sea level. Now, increasingly, he's working abroad.
There's so many cities around the world in deltas or in coastal zones very close to the water that are in jeopardy. Millions of people in these big cities need to be protected against the impacts of floods and climate change, and the Dutch know how to do that.
The Dutch know-how extends well beyond pumping and draining. I've come to Rotterdam Harbour to see an experimental project that could help communities cope with rising sea levels, not by draining and reclaiming land, but by building on water.
The complete structure is actually floating, and to make sure that it doesn't drift off to some other harbour, it's attached with mooring piles.
Bart Rufen and his colleagues at DeltaSync designed this floating pavilion. Under a domed roof, 10,000 square feet of floor space, bobbing ever so gently by the quayside.
Yeah, you can see it here, that there's a few centimetres of movement.
Yeah. Just ever so slightly up and down. Yeah. The base is made of polystyrene foam encased in concrete, a great way to create extra space in a densely populated country where land is scarce but water plentiful. And it's not too pricey to build.
It costs around 10 to 15% more than a regular building.
That's not
huge difference.
So, no, it's not a huge difference, and the water value is not as high as the land value. So that's what you can save.
Elsewhere in Rotterdam Harbour, Peter Vingerden is planning another waterborne innovation, a floating dairy farm.
We start with 40 cows, and after that we will have 6,000 chicken. And then we have a greenhouse. So we create the first food strip on the water inside the city.
He reckons the farm will be of huge interest to low-lying coastal cities that want to guarantee their food production in case their farmland is flooded. And he insists the cows will love it too.
It's a very well-designed farm. It's a very soft membrane floor that they're walking on. It's continuously clean.
Aren't they going to get seasick?
They are not going to get seasick because cows are the same like human being. I mean, if you are on a stable platform, we're a specialist in creating very stable platforms.
So it won't bob about.
Zero. Completely zero. It's 100% as stable as on the land. So you don't notice even that you are on the water. There's a robot that keeps cleaning the floor continuously. So the cows are on a very soft and clean floor, and they love it.
They don't prefer it to grass, surely.
And they prefer the membrane floor because it's very soft, it's very good for their feet, and it's always clean. So they prefer the membrane floor. That's very funny.
As entrepreneurs sell Dutch water expertise across the globe, they're doing what the Netherlands has always done. The technology has vastly improved, but they're still profiting from environmental adversity, benefiting from curbing the sea. Stephen Beard, DW, Rotterdam.
Staying with water, we head to the French region of Brittany, which is famous for its beautiful beaches. But in recent years, that reputation has been tainted by green algae. Algae thrive on nitrates used in fertilisers that run off from agricultural land and end up in rivers, lakes and coastal waters. Farming is one of Brittany's biggest industries, and experts say a drastic cut in nitrate fertiliser use is needed to combat the plague. But as our reporter Lisa Louis reports from Brittany, farmers are reluctant.
I'm standing at a beautiful spot. That's typical for Brittany. A beach with white sand in a rocky cove. You can hear the seagulls and breathe in this really nice sea air. But there is something spoiling this. Right over there, on the other side of the beach, I can see some kind of green carpet. It's algae. Right now, the organisms are harmless. You can even eat them. But in just 48 hours, they will decompose and release hydrogen sulfide in the process, a toxic gas smelling of rotten eggs. Vincent Petit, a veterinarian, experienced this firsthand a few years ago.
I was horse riding on the Saint-Michel beach. After my horse riding, I stepped off my horse. We were both walking on the beach and suddenly we fall into a big hole full of a mix of sand, water and algae, rotten algae. It was the same color of the sand. In two steps we fell in it. In a couple of seconds we were fully in the hole with no means to get back from there. In 10 seconds my horse passed out. I just had time to call for help to a man working on a tractor a few meters away, and I passed out.
The veterinarian was rescued that day, but his horse didn't survive the accident. It died from the poisonous gas released by the putrefied sludge. And Vincent's horse is probably not the only victim of the algae plague. Over the years, two people and a few wild boars were found dead near algae hotspots. Brittany alone has 8 of those hotspots. Beaches located in coves where the water doesn't flow away easily. Algae develop when there is a lot of light, high temperatures and a high concentration of nitrates. Beaches naturally have a lot of light and high temperatures, but how do the nitrates get into the water? They run off from fertilizer used by local farms. That's one of Brittany's biggest industries, which has a loud voice. One of these voices is Laurent Gagnon, who has 100 cows on his farm near the coast.
On utilise des fertilisants, alors soit organiques, soit des engrais minéraux.
If we don't use fertilizer, we won't be able to produce enough food for our animals. We would have to buy fodder, and that would bring down our revenue even further. We are already struggling. The milk price has gone down from 300 to 250 euros per ton over the past 2 years.
Sur 300 euros à peu près, quoi.
Gagnon says he calculates exactly how much fertilizer his crops need, so that none ends up in the water. But unfortunately, that's not enough, because Gagnon also feeds his animals with the corn he grows, just like most farmers in the region. And corn has a drawback. It stops growing in August and no longer soaks up the nitrates that continue developing in the soil, even if Gagnon stops fertilizing. As soon as it rains, that then gets washed into the rivers and the sea.
Par rapport à la surface qu'on a, on est obligé de sortir un certain tonnage de...
Corn helps us stay profitable. It yields 13 tons per hectare compared to only 8 tons in the case of grass. And corn is a lot easier to grow and harvest.
Est en herbe, on est autour de 8 tonnes de matière sèche par hectare.
Gagnon has reduced the fertilizer he uses and the proportion of corn he feeds his cows. Like him, 80% of Brittany's farmers have signed up to the region's anti-algae plan. The government has spent 40 million euros over the past 5 years to combat the problem and to compensate farmers for any lower productivity.
Bah écoutez, les algues vertes, c'est un phénomène qu'on connaît.
Thierry Burlot, the regional government's vice president in charge of environmental matters, says that sum will now be topped up by another 55 million euros.
C'est l'équilibre de fertilisation sur les cultures, c'est une meilleure gestion de l'azote organique.
With our new plan, we'll reduce the proportion of nitrates in the water even further. And we have already drastically improved water quality. We'll continue to modify the landscape so that the water can flow off more easily. Brittany is on the move. We're adapting our agricultural model.
On est en grande mutation, en grande transformation de nos agricultures.
The water quality in Brittany has indeed improved, and yet there have been more algae this spring than for the past 15 years. The reasons: a mild winter with few storms that could have cleared the water, and high temperatures. It's feared this combination could occur more often in the future due to global warming. That's why Yves-Marie Lelay thinks the government needs to do more. He is the vice president of the association Stop the Green Tides and regularly measures the gas at Brittany's beaches.
La situation perdure. C'est-à-dire qu'on a mis beaucoup de millions d'euros.
There is still more than 30 milligrams of nitrates per litre of water. That has to go down to 10 in order to prevent any blooms of algae from developing.
De nitrate dans l'eau des rivières pour qu'il n'y ait plus de marée verte.
Le Lay thinks the only way to get below that threshold is to thoroughly overhaul Brittany's agricultural model.
Donc, ce qu'on peut envisager en faisant une culture à forte valeur ajoutée,
we should focus on quality and not quantity. Farmers would then need less fertilizer, and they wouldn't even lose money, as organic products fetch considerably higher prices.
Et donc, ce que l'on perd sur le kilo, on le gagne sur la qualité.
But many farmers think that going down that route is too risky. They say the prices for organic products are subject to fluctuations on the world markets. The government is unlikely to impose radical change either. All of its anti-algae plans so far have been on a voluntary basis. For DW, this is Lisa Louis from Brittany.
Don't go near the water. Don't you think it's sad? What's happened to the water? Our water's going bad.
And that wraps up the show for today. Our program was produced with the help of Eliana Giaducci and Mark Simmer. You can listen to Living Planet anytime on iTunes or SoundCloud. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at DW Environment. I'm Charlotte Lomas. Catch you next week.
Don't go near the water. Ain't it safe?